A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, and here we are again, another Saturday morning.
Yes.
Brighter now for our presence, I'm
right.
sure, right?
Exactly.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
Now, this is going to be a fun week because we visited one of the coolest places
yes.
that I've been in a while, and it's right here in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I am so excited to be able to share this with everyone a little bit later in the show. We learned a lot of really cool and interesting things about decorating and things that we can use in our own homes and be inspired by.
Right. We'll tell you about that a little bit later. We're also going to be in the studio with Brad Krause from Service Professor to talk about power generators because nobody likes being without power and without TV and without blenders. Right?
Right, because the blender is the important part. But first, we're going to kick the show off on the right foot because we're sitting here with the wall doctor himself, Jason Austin, and we've got a number of questions for him. Jason? Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now, we had you on before, and we talked about all of the things that you will come out and do, how you'll finish drywall for people. What if people want to do it themselves? Do you have any tips that you can recommend for people trying to hang their own drywall?
Absolutely. If you're talking about the hanging the drywall, mm-hmm. then use the longest sheets as possible. So, and I always run the drywall horizontal if I can.
Okay.
So if a wall is 11 feet long, buy a 12-foot sheet of drywall because if you're going to be mudding it yourself, the fewer joints there are, the easier it's going to be for you. And, you know, butt joints are usually where you have two end joints coming together mm-hmm. are usually the hardest joints to do. If you're above doorways, you always want to make sure that the seam is not straight off the edge. You want to kind of have it go so that the seam is in the middle of the doorway or in
okay.
the middle of the windows because those are usually where with a door, you're slamming the door shut all the time. And just that vibration will cause that to crack. Also,
so you want the joint centered over the door.
Yeah, preferably. Because
okay.
what often happens is that also you have about three or four different studs there all at the same place. And if you try to have a seam right there, all that wood is just shrinking and moving at different rates. So that can cause that to crack as well.
Uh-huh.
And so also when you're screwing around those corners, you want to stay away from the exact corner. Because mm-hmm. if you put a screw right there, usually if you have a 2x4 that's just slightly in like a sliver and mm-hmm. you put it into that one, it's going to cause that whole thing to crack. So avoid that. In the field, you want to make sure the screws are in far enough, but not too far. And there's like you got a sliver to play with here. It's got to be, the screw has to be buried below the surface, but if it goes too far, it breaks the paper and then it's useless.
We ran into a little, an attachment bit
yeah.
for a driver that kind of countersinks the screw. I mean, my experience with that is it's worked really well. It puts it exactly where it needs to be.
Not too far in.
Right.
Which is
99 out of 100 times. I don't know that I've ever, using that little bit, driven it too far into mm-hmm. the paper.
Absolutely. And I used to have I still do have a drywall screw gun, and yet I almost never use it anymore because I've been just using those little bits on my cordless, and it just works great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple different ones. There's the ones with the end, which is solid, and it doesn't rotate. So when you screw it in, when it gets to the right depth, it tends to want to tear up the paper a little bit. But there's another one that's about $5 a bit, and you can get them at the hardware stores. And the nice thing about that is the end actually turns, so that when that turning end hits the drywall, it stops turning, but the screw still tweaks in a little bit deeper. And
right, that's what I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And those are great because they don't tear up the paper. If you're pushing on the drywall and you see any movement right around the screw and you see almost like a little bit of dust just coming out, you know you've gone too far. And that's, you just got to take the screw out, put another screw right in there and beside it. Also use glue.
I was just going to ask about glue. What do you feel about that?
That is the way to go because really, every time you have a drywall screw, you have a potential pop. Or even over time, sometimes you'll just see with light shining down a wall, you'll see where all the screws are. They'll just kind of, over time, those kind of not pop out, but those kind of show a slight indent.
Right, right.
And so glue is great because the fewer screws you have in the field, you know, the less potential for that showing through over time.
So you use glue. How many screws does that reduce from a sheet?
Well, the code is that you're supposed to have a drywall screw every 24 inches. So on 16-inch studs, you're going to have one every stud, but you can put one dead center as long as you have the whole perimeter screwed. But in the field where the screws are actually going to show, usually mm-hmm. around the perimeter, all the screws are going to be covered with tape. But in the field, you'd want to basically go, 24 inches up and then every 16 inches.
But without glue, you're looking at a lot more.
You'd want to do a lot more. You'd want to do at least two per stud in the field.
Okay.
So in a sheet of drywall that's 8 feet wide, you'd have a dozen screws. But
right.
with glue, you can get away with just three or four.
We're in the studio with the wall doctor, Jason Austin, and we're asking him for some drywalling tips. Now, you were just talking about the glue. I have to ask, is that going to help reduce the screw pops? Because that's one thing I notice a lot of places where you see in drywall that's, 5-6 years old, all of a sudden you see every screw that they put in. Is that going to help reduce
well,
that?
Well, it'll reduce
so that
the
they,
number of screws,
well,
but will it
reduce actually them popping? Is there anything we can do to reduce screw pops?
Well, the glue actually, what the screws are really doing is they're pulling the drywall into the glue until the glue sets. Once the glue set, it's doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't take the screws out.
Right.
But the glue's doing all the work. So
even
you
if I'm trying to save a lot of money, I still shouldn't pull those screws out. And reuse
wow.
them. Now, even I'm not that cheap. I know better than that. So the glue will actually not just reduce the number of screws and therefore reduce pops, it will also reduce the chances of pops even with the screws that we did use.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, what about finishing tips? Because that's the next part of the process. I know you will come out and actually do this for people.
Yes.
If they've hung their own drywall, you'll come out and gladly refinish or finish it. But what about the people who want to do it themselves? What tips do you have? Because that is honestly the really complicated part of this process in my book.
Yeah, if you're using paper tape, that's one of the hardest things for homeowners to do, because you want to make sure that you get, when you're taping the corners, you want to make sure your mud's thin enough. And if you're using all-purpose mud out of a pail, you want to thin it down. A lot of times people just take that pail and they'll open it up and they'll just scoop the mud out and just start using it as is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Some people might do that. I can see where some
I can
novices...
see how some people in this room do that. And I'm guessing, well,
so
I know it's not me and I'm sure it's
yeah.
not Jason. So,
so
that
I'm supposed
one.
To thin it down?
Yes, you can thin it down. And in fact, with one pail mud, I mean, you can thin it down a lot for doing textured ceilings. You can thin it down not as much for doing tape in the corners. You can use it thicker for when you're filling your joints. The more water you add, the more it's going to shrink. But
okay.
And when you're putting the tape on the corners, that doesn't matter because you're going to be going over it. You want to get that tape in there. So what I would first do is I would pre-fill all my corners. I would use quick-set mud for pre-filling because quick-set mud doesn't shrink. So I can mix up a batch of it. I use 5-minute mud, but obviously, if you're going to do it yourself, I would suggest using more like 45 or 90 minutes. You shouldn't.
He's looking at me.
But yeah, so once you get that mud mixed up and you just add water to the powder, and once that water hits it, it's activated. Warm water makes it set up a little bit faster. Just use nice cold water, clean water, mix up your mud to a thickness that you like,
sure.
Pre-fill your corners, get everything nice and square, and then after that sets up, you can use your tape with regular all-purpose mud, watering it down so it's nice and loose, and you want to make sure that the corner is fully covered. You embed your tape in there, you wipe it nice and clean, you make sure that the inside corner is tight. Sometimes people tend to round those inside corners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes it a lot harder each step down the road when you're mudding it and finishing off. After that, with corners, what I would suggest is you coat one side. You let that dry fully with all-purpose mud. The next day, you coat the other side. On the flats, butt joints, all that, you can use mesh tape, which is a lot easier to use. If you're going to use mesh tape, there's two kinds. There's the regular kind that you can buy, but there's also an extra strength kind, which I prefer to use. But the biggest trick with mesh tape is you always have to embed it with quick-set mud.
Why is that?
It's just a stronger mud. It doesn't shrink as much. And what I've noticed is that when I'm doing repair work, a lot of the times when I'm doing repair works at people's houses, they've used regular mesh with regular all-purpose mud out of a pail, and it just cracks. So
quick-set mud when I'm using the mesh tapes.
Yes.
Even if I'm using the heavy-duty tape?
Absolutely.
Okay.
After you get the mesh tape coated, one coat where you can't see the mesh anymore, you can use any kind of mud you want after that.
Okay. So once you've used that quick set in the beginning, then you can go to any mud after
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. For my finish coat, I always put three coats on all the flats and butt joints and all that stuff. So I'll use, if I'm doing a quick job where I'm trying to get it all done in one day, I will use 5 minute mud and I will use two coats of that, and my finish coat will be lightweight. It doesn't shrink quite as much. It comes in a pail. There's a couple different brands. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about those is that they're easier to sand. They're a little bit softer, but they're easier to sand and they spread on nicely. Where with the all-purpose, it's great for everything. You can mm-hmm. use it for everything. It's really good for texturing and it's really good for putting the tape on the corners if you're using paper tape.
Awesome. Jason, there is so much that we could go into. I loved getting all of that info.
Can I mention one final
thing? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, just I interrupt everybody all the time.
To me, the biggest thing, though, is sanding. You know, when you get to that sanding, that's the biggest important part. You know, you could, I'll use a pole sander and go over everything with 120 grit or 150 grit sandpaper, but then I'll take a 200 watt light bulb and I'll hold that light bulb in my hand, and with a fine sponge sander I'll go over every single square inch and just finally make sure every little imperfection is done. Because if you can't see a problem with a 200 watt light bulb, you know, a foot away from the spot you're sanding, and always sand on with a light on an angle so it's shining down the wall, not just in front of you. But if you don't see it with that, you're not going to see it with the natural light that you have in your house. You're not going to see the problems. But if you're just trying to sand without a light, you're going to get everything painted. You're going to turn the lights on or natural sunlight's going to come in the window and you're going to be disappointed.
Jason, if our listeners want to get in touch with you and maybe have you help them finish their project, or if they've just got more questions, how's the best way to do that?
They can call me at 616-218-0234. They can check out my website at walldoctoronline.com, or they can email me at jason@walldoctoronline.com. And oftentimes, if you email me some pictures, I can look over those pictures with a small repair and I can give you a price right over that.
Excellent. Can't recommend it enough. Jason, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Now, this past week, we visited one of the coolest houses I've ever been in. And if you're feeling a little stuck in your decorating, you can really get inspired by going and seeing this home on your own. And best of all, it was designed by one of America's greatest architects. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, and we're back, and I'm excited about this.
Yeah, me too.
This is a fun segment, I hope. I hope it turns out.
It will be. Come on now, you know it will be.
It was a great experience, let's just say that.
It was, yeah.
Now, we toured a particular home. Now,
yes.
Let's just start with the architect himself, Frank
the
Lloyd Wright.
The great man himself.
Right, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah, who doesn't know that name?
I know the name. I didn't know a whole lot about him, other than he was a
brilliant
American architect.
Right.
So, just to give you some real quick information.
Right.
I just said he was an American architect, mm-hmm. an interior designer, a writer, and an educator. He designed more than 1,000 different structures, and I think over 500 of them were actually realized,
right?
You know, put up.
Yep.
Now, he believed in designing structures mm-hmm. that were in harmony mm-hmm. with humanity and the environment.
Right.
It was a philosophy that he called organic architecture.
Yeah, it was part of the prairie style of architecture that he kind of pioneered.
Right.
That style of architecture is all about simplicity in the design and mm-hmm. the decoration. It has all those great horizontal lines and those very low or flat roofs. And it's all about kind of blending into the landscape so that
being part of the landscape,
right.
emerging from the landscape.
Yeah, it looks like it's growing literally out of the landscape.
Right.
That's
sick of the whole. You know, he looked at American architecture and saw that it was just drawing from houses in Europe, box
right.
houses that were representative of what was happening overseas.
And they were so ornate
so
and
ornate.
Over the top.
He wanted an American style of architecture, so this prairie home mm-hmm. emerged out of
right.
that. Low houses, mm-hmm. a little more sweeping in nature.
Yeah,
but
long.
Again, blending with the landscape. That was the idea. Now, it sounds kind of nebulous. You know, it's one of those concepts out there that if you're not up with this stuff, maybe it
right.
zips over your
yeah.
head. But there's good news for you
mm-hmm.
because I was in your boat. It zipped right over my head.
Until this past week.
But it turns out there's a perfect example of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture, prairie home,
mm-hmm.
right here in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, it's called the Meyer May House. It was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, and it was for Meyer and Sophie May. He designed it in 1908, and the building was actually completed in 1909, which seems like a very short time for such a massive house and all of the work when you see it that would have gone into building this particular house. Now, over the years, it changed, and they added on and things like that because it needed to be bigger. In 1985, there was actually a restoration project done on the house to take it back to its glory days.
A major renovation, restoration,
yes.
I should say.
Yeah.
I mean, people hail this around the country as one of the premier restoration projects.
Yeah, it
Am
is.
Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's museum quality. And the stunning part to me was that it only took them 2 years. Mm-hmm. That is, when you see the before and after pictures, holy cow, how did they get it done so quickly? And now the great thing is it's open to the public for tours. So
right. They've got specific hours.
Yes.
And they're incredibly busy.
Yes,
so
they
be
are.
Very kind and considerate when you go down there in droves. You've
yes.
got to call ahead.
Right.
But you need to go through this house.
Uh-huh.
It's right here in Grand Rapids. It's amazing.
Yeah.
We did that this past week.
Yep.
And while the architectural style you know, may not appeal to every single person out there,
right.
there is still a ton that we can learn from just looking at what he did and why he did what he did. And
yeah.
we can take that and apply that to any style of architecture, any decorating that we do.
Yeah, any of our
anything.
Homes. Exactly.
So we've got a number of things that we're going to work through, and we're going to kind of explain what he did, what Frank Lloyd Wright did in this home, and then we're going to hopefully give you some jumping off points that maybe you could do in your own home.
Right.
And let's start with the first one, and I guess we'll just call it bucking the trends. It's okay to buck the trends.
Right. We've talked about this with Thomas.
All the time.
Well, we talked about it with Thomas Jefferson. He bucked the trend. We encouraged
people to do so. Well, we didn't specifically sit down with Thomas Jefferson and, and discuss this.
No.
That would be an interview.
Yes.
That Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be very awesome.
It'd be more like a seance than an interview.
Yes, that's a little creepy.
A little less awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so we talked about it before, and we encourage you to step outside the box, but the great thing about Frank Lloyd Wright is he completely bucked the trends with this house. It sits in amongst houses that were the traditional European style, huge,
right.
giant front porches.
Everywhere you look.
Massive.
Traditional houses.
Yeah.
And then this modernistic house.
Very low,
very
flat.
Low.
It looks like it literally rises out of the landscape.
They talked about how the kids growing up in the house, the May children,
yeah.
lived in the weird house. You know,
yeah,
they all thought
they
it was the weird house in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It completely bucked the trends. But
right.
it was so unique. It was their house, and that's part of the beauty of this. Frank Lloyd Wright designed this specifically for the family.
Yeah.
It wasn't about everybody else. It
Mm-mm.
was crazy because we walked through with a group where there was an enormously tall gentleman.
Yeah, he was like, what did he say? 6'5 or 6'6?
Now, maybe for a lot of people, that's not enormously tall.
Right.
For me,
and
I couldn't even see his head sometimes. It was so far away.
Right. He almost banged his head a couple times.
Because the home was built for the May family.
Right.
And they
May was what they, what did they say? 5'8.5".
Right. A very high end of average.
Right.
So it was built for them in mind. Now, why is that important? It's important because that was their home.
Right.
And what we're talking about here is so many people, we see them in the store.
Mm-hmm.
I've been the same person. We've
yeah.
all done this. We come in and we're trying to pick colors. We're trying to design with somebody else in mind. And we know that's true. We're always looking at colors thinking, mm-hmm. boy, if I put that color on, the people who come through are going to think I'm crazy.
Right.
Even though I like it, I better go to something that's a little more trendy.
Or ask what's popular.
Right.
What's popular right now?
It
doesn't matter.
It's not about that. This
nope.
is your place.
Right.
You know, another thing that was interesting, the same lines, is that the front door is hidden. It's actually on the side of the house along the side of the driveway.
Yeah, you would never know where
it's
it was.
It's not on the front of the house. It's not
nope.
where you would think it would be.
Right.
That's the opposite of what we do today. You know, the front door is always the welcoming point. That's
yeah,
what we always
talk about. We've talked about that before. Oh, make your home very welcoming. Put that bright color on your front door. Invite people in. But yet, that wasn't at all what he was saying. He was saying, this is your family. This is your space. You don't have to share it with anyone unless you want to.
Exactly. Now, we're running out of time on this segment, so we're going to pick it up on the other side of the break.
Yep.
Make sure you stay tuned because we'll keep talking about the Meyer May House in Grand Rapids and all the things we can learn from it. Stay right there.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore.
on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back.
We are.
And we're talking about the Frank Lloyd Wright House in Grand Rapids, the Meyer May House.
Right.
It's designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. You can go for tours, free tours.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's amazing.
I was shocked when they said it's free.
I had no idea it even existed.
Yeah, a lot
but
of people don't.
But it's a great opportunity. It's a great day trip. They are busy.
They are.
They talked about how the crowds are starting to find them. So we don't want to add to their stress.
Right.
So call ahead and maybe they can help you figure out some good times to come.
Right.
But you need to go through it because there's so many lessons we can learn, even if we're not fans of that particular style of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what we were just talking about in the last segment. And what we were talking about there was how it's okay to buck the trends. It's okay to choose colors that are specifically for you. And the reason we're saying that is because this home was designed, and that's how Frank Lloyd Wright did things. He designed everything in the home for the family, for the specific use. We talked about how the ceilings were very low because the family was average height.
Right.
One of the things that I thought was great is that the dining room windows, when you stand in the dining room area, the windows seem too low.
Yes.
But when you sit down, which we didn't because we're not supposed to.
Right.
But if you would sit down, you would realize that they're at the perfect height for looking out. Everything was designed for the purpose of the use of the room and for the family in mind.
Yeah.
So in your own home, design, decorate, do all of that with yourself in mind and your family.
Right.
What you need, not what other people say, not what designers say is what you need, and not what even what we say.
Right.
We'll make some recommendations. But if you don't like that color or those color combinations, go with what you feel are the colors you love the most.
Right. And I just want to quickly point out, we talked about the front door not existing. It was kind of hidden around the back side of the house.
Yeah, talk about the reason why, because that's so cool.
The reason why is because Frank Lloyd Wright felt that your house is like your sanctuary, that people shouldn't just be walking up and intruding into your time, your family, your life.
Such a refreshing concept.
It is in this day of telemarketers and people banging on your doors. It's a great concept. But I would also like to point out that although the door is round the back to, you know, keep people that you don't want from just walking up to your house, it is a very inviting house. That doesn't mean that he was saying, oh, you shouldn't have visitors, because in fact the house is set up.
It was designed for visitors.
Right.
But it was visitors who showed up on the family's terms.
Right, who were invited to show up.
Even the front porch, they have a veranda.
Yes.
And there is no access to that from the road.
Nope.
So your neighbors aren't going to walk up.
Nope.
Salesmen aren't going to walk up.
Right.
They can't get through the hedge. So it's your space.
Right.
And I love that. I love the idea of that, you know, because we had tons of people at my old house in Zealand. I had a porch and a little sidewalk that led right to the main sidewalk, and we'd get salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to enjoy time out there with your family, and people are constantly showing up.
Right.
I'm even tempted to, if I were living there yet and was going to stay there a long time, I'd be tempted to pull that sidewalk out that leads directly up to my house.
Mm-hmm.
I can't touch the city sidewalk.
Right.
But I can get mine out, maybe put grass there. If I was going to live there forever, I probably would put a hedge around it and kind of cordon off my space a little bit.
Well, my mom did a similar thing because she didn't want people walking up, so she put huge potted plants so that people wouldn't walk up that way. And I've actually seen it driving around town. There are people who do that. It's a great thing. Find little ways that you can make
reclaim your area, your space, your time.
Yes, because
especially this day and age.
Oh, absolutely. So once you've reclaimed your space, then there's time to do this other little thing that we like to call design and function. And this is what Frank Lloyd Wright was phenomenal at, because we always think, you know, it's form over function or function over form. You know, okay, that thing has to be there, so it is
what it
is. I got
to just deal with how it looks.
Right. Or I really want it to look great. It's
even
not really going to do its job,
well.
But, you know, it looks good, so that's all
Frank
that
matters. Frank Lloyd Wright just like
split
the atom between the two of those things.
Yeah, it was incredible. We were looking at the basement of this house, or the outside, you know, where you would just barely see it above the ground.
Normally we'd have those little creepy windows.
Yes, his windows match all of the rest of the windows.
Beautiful
in
leaded
that
glass.
Holy smokes. And it's not the cinder block. If you look at all the rest of the houses
for the foundation,
in the area, yeah, it's all the nasty block or stone. And it's like, okay,
again,
it is what it is.
It's function. That's what we need.
Right. You have
he wasn't
to have
happy
that.
With that.
No. So it actually matches all the rest of the lines and the rest of the exterior of the home. It is gorgeous.
My favorite example of that is a load-bearing wall, a support wall that kind of separated the dining area from this big open concept living room.
Right.
So they had to have this wall there to keep things, you know, supported.
Yes.
Load-bearing wall.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with that. Right. You've got this big open space, all these windows, nature is pouring in the windows, which is part of, you know, his whole aesthetic. What do we do with this wall? Well, he specifically gets involved and has it designed so that a mural is painted on the wall to reflect the flowers and all of that outside. What a creative way to fix this functional item that has to
this
be there,
thing that's there
and turn it into something that is both beautiful and functional.
Yeah, it's like the whole, I'll have my cake and eat it too. So, that's exactly what it
is. Exactly. So what do we do with this in our own homes? How do we apply that? Basically, you just look at it from the idea that if you've got elements in your home that can't be changed, you know, architectural elements that have to be there, you can still make them look good. You can still bring form into that whole thing. You just need to get creative. And I think paint is probably the way to best do that.
It
don't
is.
You?
It is, because I have a steel beam running through the center of my house.
Head? Oh, house.
My house.
That would explain the weird mood shifts, that big steel shaft protruding from your forehead.
Yes, that's what happens when the weather changes.
A construction accident left Betsy that way.
Instead of just painting it black, I put a metallic paint over top of the black, and it is so much better. Then I put cool little LED lights over top, and it's way better. So I changed my architectural feature that had to be there and made it cool.
There are so many more things that we could cover. You know, he used Unity in everything he did. The light fixtures, everything tied the rooms together. The paint colors, all of that is key.
The entire house, he just repeated the same thing over and over
and over. Different variations on it.
Yep.
You know, so it wasn't boring.
Right.
The colors changed in proportions from room to room, but it was the same overall feel. The whole house felt unified and yet interesting and different from room to room. There is so much we could explain and talk about. It was so much fun going through that house.
I had a blast.
And we can't recommend it enough. Make sure you do that. It's a great opportunity right in our own backyard. Free tours. The Meyer May House in Grand Rapids. Just make sure you call ahead and make sure that they can handle whatever group you're bringing through.
Exactly.
Now, when we come back, we're going to be in the studio talking with Brad Krause from Service Professor about power generators.
Yes, so you don't lose lights the next time the power goes out.
Exactly. That's coming up next. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, neither one of us is super, super smart when it comes to electrical stuff.
No, we can do the simple stuff, but anything beyond that is, we leave that to the professionals. That's why we have Brad Krause from Service Professor in the studio with us. Brad, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back. Appreciate it.
Hey, we're glad to have you back. So I want to talk about something that I used to experience all the time, which is power outages. They happened for weeks on end at my old house.
Weeks on end?
Oh my goodness. In the middle of summer, no thunderstorm, 85 degrees outside, and the power would go out for a week. That's when I decided to get a new fridge, by the way. But I would, you know, go to the garage, roll out my generator, gas it up, and then run all the extension cords into my house so my doors were never locked. I'm guessing there's a much better option out here, and that's what I want to talk about.
Excellent. Well, that's a great, valid concern, especially lately. There's been a lot of power outages in West Michigan, and we watch them very closely because we know that's one of the needs of our clients. So, yeah, what you're speaking of is a portable system, you know, the typical portable generator you might see at the hardware store or something of that nature. Very useful in a situation such as this. As Service Professor, we certainly want to make that as convenient as possible for you to have one of those systems. Many people do the same as what you did. You know, they'll roll it out, start plugging in extension cords, maybe hit their refrigerator, their freezers and stuff, all the necessities.
The television. the blender.
Well, I had only so many lights that I could light up.
Oh, who needs light?
Right.
You know, many people don't know that you can actually legally backfeed your electrical system in your home to give power to the entire home. I would never say run the entire home because that's quite a feat for a smaller generator like that. There's other options, which we'll probably discuss. But on a portable side, you can certainly have the option to turn every light on in the home, if you will. It's just important to shut it off when you're done using it. Real quick, one thing we've seen as electricians and the utilities worry about is the homeowner backfeeding their house in their way, the non-legal way. You know, a lot of people will actually take a double male cord, plug it into the generator, plug it into a wall outlet, and say, "Wow, I've got power throughout my home now." But the problem with that is that you can very easily accidentally backfeed the utility lines. And many linesmen across the country lose their lives every year because of that, because it's not hooked up correctly through what's called a transfer switch. So just to let the audience know, if you know, it's not to be taken lightly, because you can very much accidentally do a lot of harm, not only to the equipment that's feeding your home, but also the people that are working on it in a time of need, you know, such as a power loss around a community. Yeah.
So that's the portable stuff. Let's get to the other stuff. The stuff that's more permanent, but ready to go if I've got a problem. I assume I don't have to get anything out with these other systems. I don't have to get ready. I just, the power goes off, and does my system magically kick on and protect me?
Magically, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, a little more technical than that, but yeah,
let's just run with magically.
Yeah, it feels good, yeah. So, you know, what happens there is, you know, you have a smart transfer switch, if you will, now, that senses when power is lost. So once it senses that power is lost, it'll send a signal out to the generator to start, and they either run on your LP, your propane at the home, or the natural gas. They can be converted either way. And then it will start back up, send power back to the transfer switch. Transfer switch analyzes it, says, yes, this is good, safe power for these for this home, makes the transfer, and you have power. And all that happens in approximately 10 seconds, believe it or not. So you literally don't have time to get out of the recliner in the middle of the football game, and you have power back. They're extremely convenient.
So that's a unit that's outside the house, I'm assuming, right?
Correct.
Does it sit alongside the house, like by like an air conditioner, or is it big like that? Bigger than that?
They're a little bit bigger than an air conditioner. They're about the sound of a central air conditioner as far as decibels, the noise level.
Okay, so it's not going to be like the portable ones that Betsy's describing.
You will not drive your neighbors nuts with one of those, correct? And So, as far as where they're located, there's some strategies, some logistics about where we put them, because we want to certainly give the best upfront cost, and where it's located certainly depicts that to some manner. But we've also remotely located them out in the woods 100 yards away from the house before for clients that just never want to look at them. So we've done that. And we've had them painted by body shops to match certain colors and different things.
Really?
Of that nature.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yep. So, hey, some people want it the way they want it, and that's good.
Okay, so what are the sizes on things like this, like for the average house?
So to put this in perspective, let's talk back to your portable unit that you're referring to. Typically, those are somewhere between 4 and 6,000 watts, okay, or 4 to 6K, they call them, KW. So the most common generator that we install is a Kohler 14 KW, 14,000 watt unit. And then the other option, probably the second most installed unit, is a 20 kW.
Okay.
So those, depending on the house, the size of the home, the equipment that you need to run, can run that house. Our goal is, if you're going to invest in a generator to this magnitude, that we want to make sure it's completely ultra convenient for you. You'll never have any issues, and you can live your life normally with or without power just the same.
Right. So you're not going to notice anything except for that little gap of time the power goes out. You said it takes about 10 seconds before everything's back. I'm not going to have to not run my toaster or not run my blender. It all will work with what you're talking about. Whereas with the other ones that Betsy had, because I had the same thing happen, we had to make really serious, heavy choices about what things got powered.
Mm-hmm.
It was very depressing.
Absolutely. And
my blender did not win out, nor did the toaster.
Right.
Went with the heater. And, you know, things like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, necessity
the
stuff.
The freezer and the fridge.
Yeah. Yes.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But that's not going to happen here.
It doesn't have to, no. And
okay.
We certainly get a certain level of customers that say, hey, I'm going to save a little bit of money by going to the 14,000 watt unit, and I have a huge house and two air conditioners. Let's just run the West Wing air conditioner when we're out without power. And we can, through
making those cuts.
Yeah, making those cuts, right? Sacrificing.
Uh-huh.
So electrically, we can actually not allow certain things to be on the system, if you will. Don't want to get in the weeds on that and bore you to death. But electrically, we can make those things happen if necessary to make some concessions in hopes of having a lower investment on the front end.
You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and we're in the studio with Brad Krause from Service Professor, and we're talking about power generators.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't always get people who are willing to be pinned down on a brand, so I don't know where you're going to go with this, but are there particular brands that you'd recommend over other ones?
Yeah, you know, being an electrician, of course, I have my own opinions, but, you know, I like to use third-party validation to, you know, sometimes it's not the guy telling you what I believe in, but in generators, there certainly is. We believe in Kohler. We have for, you know, 20-plus years. There's some great brands out there. Probably the most recognized name is Generac. All the big box stores sell that. And that's based on price point alone. But we look at it as whether you're making a $7,000 investment or an $8,000 investment, let's say, to go with a Kohler. You know, none of them do you any good if the thing doesn't start. That's a pretty deflating moment when you make that investment and it doesn't start outside for you. So, you know, we rely on Consumers Reports a lot. So consumersreport.org, if you go there, Kohler's been the number one rated generator for many years. And they do it in a couple of primary categories. Reliability, which is starting ratio, basically. Does the thing start? And being in the Midwest, being here in Michigan, obviously it's very important. We have some real brutal winters, and we want to make sure it starts in the harshest of temperatures. And then the other one is sound and loudness, and that has the lowest decibel rating. They rate it at 21 feet. I couldn't tell you why, but that's the measurement for generator sound levels, and it's the quietest generator out there. So a lot of conviction made right here in America, you know, Kohler, Wisconsin. So there's several reasons why we kind of err to the side of Kohler.
Okay, now I have a quick question about that, because I know that there are varying degrees within brands. Like, you know, in paint, we sell one brand of paint, but so does a big box store, and they are not equal in what they do. Is that the same with these generators? Kind of, you get what you pay for.
There is a level of that.
Okay.
And again, we just go by statistics. So my biggest one is I want the thing to start for my clients. Mm-hmm. I mean, when there's massive power outages in the area, it's a good time for us electrically, you know, if you think about it, for our electrical department. So last thing we want to be doing selfishly is maintaining generators that we put in.
Mm-hmm.
But worse than that is to have somebody that made that sort of investment and then they wake up and the thing didn't start. That's a tough conversation to have with folks.
Yeah.
Talking about that investment, we've got just a few seconds left. What kind of range are we looking for something like that? Just ballpark it.
Sure. Yeah. And it is a little bit of a ballpark because a lot of variables in different homes. But I would say if somebody wanted to get into a standby system, to expect somewhere between, you know, $7,000 to $10,000. And with that, probably the majority of ours are somewhere between $7,000 and $8,000, I would say. Portable systems, you can have a nice portable system hooked up legally with a transfer switch. Requires a little more manual labor for you to hook it up. You have to be home.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get those with a generator for somewhere between probably $2,500 and $3,500, I would say. You know, differences between both and our clientele is, you know, people that travel for the winter. A lot of them have the standby systems installed. People with medical concerns that need oxygen and different things, they have the standbys. But if you're home and you have no problem wheeling that thing out and plugging it in and doing the transfer, it'll work just fine for you.
Excellent. Now, if our listeners want more information about this or any of the other services you provide at Service Professor, how do they best get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Of course, you know, to learn a little bit more about what we do in detail, you can, of course, go to our website, serviceprofessor.com, or you can live chat with our people right from our website. Or if you want to go the old-fashioned way, just call us. That works that works well. 616-871-1900 to get right into our call center right at our headquarters. So.
Excellent. Brad Krause from Service Professor, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to next time.
Well, Betsy, we've hit the end again.
Yeah.
Like the big stop sign. And we got to pull up to the stop sign
the
and come
big
to a complete and
red stop sign.
Yeah, complete and full stop.
Yes.
My son is learning to drive, and I'm teaching him about complete and full stops.
Right.
And he points out how rarely I tend to do that. So we argue about what that actually is. But this is a complete and full stop.
Yes.
But if that's very depressing to many people out there, which I'm sure it is, you can go online at repcolite.com and check out this episode and all the past episodes. You can also find us on iTunes.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Just search under the podcasts for the RepcoLite Home Improvement Show.
Yeah, make sure you're also liking us on Facebook. You can ask us your questions there. It's a great way to do that. We love answering them. We also love answering them on air. And if you don't feel like doing that, you can always email us. We do answer those, radio@repcolite.com.
And we forgot to mention during the segment that we talked about the Meyer May House, that we've got all the photos from our visit posted in our show notes.
Yep, exactly.
Now, whatever you decide to do the rest of the day, make sure that paint's a part of it. It just makes it that much better.
Yeah.
That much more fulfilling.
Right.
Stop out at any RepcoLite or Port City Paint Store. We're open until 3 o'clock today. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And we'll help you realize that it's okay to decorate your home just for you, even if the colors you like are avocado green, harvest gold, and bubblegum pink.
Or Barney purple.
Or Barney purple. It's all about you.
Right.
Make it the way you like it.
Yeah, it's not about Dan.
Not about me this time.
No.
Thanks for listening.